And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes as we will break down the Sunday night football game between the Giants and the Packers as the Packers were victorious 23-16. So we'll delve into the ins and outs of that contest. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You can also chime in via Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. And Paul, when you look at this contest offensively, struggles all across the board in terms of this Giants offense, not able to gain continuity, 4 of 13 on third down. They had one turnover, and to me, the one play that really was a huge turning point in this contest, Paul, it's a 14-6 game. Right at the end of the second quarter, Eli Manning throws over the middle of the field to Will Tye. Ball was high. Will Tye couldn't get it in. Next play, the Packers get to Eli Manning. They force the strip sack, and the Packers tack on a field goal. Could have been 14-13 potentially at the half. Instead, it's 17-6. Huge swing of momentum there.
Yeah, I think the Giants might have gone for two, to be honest, if they had gotten that touchdown. Everybody in the stadium, I was on the field for this one, Lance. Did not go up to the box. I was on the Giants bench for the whole game. And you could almost hear the entire stadium at Lambeau gasp when they saw Tye break free. And the ball's coming his way, and every Packers fan in the building was just, like, incredulous. Like, how could this happen?
Because they realized he was so open.
I mean, a tight end to be open by that much, that far down the field, it just doesn't happen. And so, you know, they were incredulous, and there was this anticipation by everybody in the building, including, you know, the Giants fans, that, wow, this is going to be really a rarity, a truly spectacular play. And, you know, ball goes off his fingertips. Now, I'm going to make something very clear. Eli Manning had a bad night. He was not sharp at all. There were a lot of passes he threw that were not exactly where they need to be. They were off. Not that they were uncatchable, because he did throw a lot of catchable balls that they did not haul in. That Will Tye one is a great example. That's a catchable ball, okay? On my stat chart, the unofficial Dottino stat chart, that's a drop for Will Tye. And a dropped touchdown on my chart.
Had a clear path. Had to catch that.
I can't, in hockey, that's a breakaway. And if you hook him down, it's a penalty shot. Pretty clear. Okay. So that one, again, not thrown perfectly. So Eli was like that all night. He was a bit off, but catchable. I thought there were a few other balls as well. There was one to Beckham. There was one to Cruz. There was one to Shepard. Catchable balls that weren't caught. I think Rainey might even had one, too.
Yeah, Rainey was involved in that as well. Okay. Manning, 18 of 35, 199 yards, had the late touchdown pass, saw a lot of pressure, though. And this is not necessarily to make excuses. I agree with you, Paul. He had an off night, but the pocket was broken down, it seemed, time after time. Just to put things in perspective here, Eli Manning was hit 10 times, Paul, in the first four games. He was hit 5 times alone in this Green Bay Packers game, and there was a lot of pressure brought to him from his blind side on the left side. Eric Flowers had another holding call. It was very difficult for him to feel comfortable, and we've seen this in the past, Paul. It seems as even when the pressure's not coming, Eli almost senses it when it's not there, and as a result, that completely forces the offense to become somewhat erratic.
Well, in most circles, they'll tell you that if the quarterback has a sixth sense and he can feel that pressure coming, that's a good thing. You want the guy to be able to have that clock in his head, to be able to anticipate, okay, I got to do something now because it's about to go bad. That's usually viewed as a good thing. It's not a good thing if that clock is too early, yeah, and it becomes a panic situation. Now, I'm going to break this game down very simply in one simple sentence, folks, because we could sit here and diagnose the penalties, the catchable balls, the fumble at the end of the game that the Giants weren't able to recover with 2 minutes to go, the injuries in the secondary. We could diagnose this in a lot of ways and come up with a laundry list of things that went wrong for the Giants yesterday. And even if you wanted to be an optimist and say, all right, some of the things that actually didn't go so badly, it's simple. They lost the battle of the trenches on both sides of the ball. That's it. Football 101, folks. I'm old school. I don't apologize for it. The Giants' offensive line did not get the job done in either the running game or protecting Eli Manning adequately, and the Giants' defensive line did not get after Aaron Rodgers. No matter how many times they rushed him, and they were rushing hard, and I said it on the postgame show, the effort was there. I will not, and don't any phone caller out there or Twitter person give me, oh, the Giants gave up, the Giants quit, the Giants didn't try. Do not give me that. I was on the sideline. I saw that game up close and personal. They were working their butts off. Absolutely trying. DRC was the epitome of a game.
Played through an injury the whole night.
He was, Lance, I kid you not, he was coming over to the bench at every timeout, hobbling, trying to work it out. He was in significant pain, and he refused to give up and give in. And then every time the defense would come off to the side of the field, they'd have to rewrap him again. And then it was their turn to go back out, and he would hobble himself back out there. I kept saying to myself, if I'm the Packers and I'm the coaching staff, if I'm not seeing this from the far sideline, I got to be seeing it from upstairs in the box. And I'm going to pick on him the rest of the night.
Just like the Vikings went after Trevin Wade the previous week.
And they really didn't pick on him all that much, although the few times they did throw at DRC, he actually did pretty darn well in making the play. Actually did better than Wade did, to be honest with you.
Well, and I was going to say overall, Paul, I mean, I agree with your assessment that the pass rush did not make it uncomfortable for Aaron Rodgers.
Pass rush was not there.
But with that being said, I think the secondary as a whole, with the injuries in consideration, deserves a lot of credit. You held Aaron Rodgers to 259 yards and you picked him off twice. Most teams don't do that.
And that is what I said before, or what I meant when I said there are some things you can find that aren't so bad about this game. Because this was a really, I mean, Apple didn't play the second half.
Groin injury.
You know? So this was a depleted secondary once again that, despite everything that went wrong for the Giants, and again, I'm still going back to the trenches. They lost the battle in the trenches on both sides of the ball. That is the number one reason the Giants lost this game last night. And I will not yield from that. That's the foundation of everything that you build in this game. So let's just nip that in the bud right there. But with 2 minutes left, the Packers coughed the ball up near midfield. And my goodness, if that ball bounces the right way, the Giants have the ball with two timeouts, half a field to go, with a chance to tie the game. That's pretty unbelievable. And that's a testament to their effort and the secondary, actually, in my mind, actually keeping them in the game and holding the fabric of the game together despite everything else that was going wrong.
Yeah, it was a second down. The Packers were driving after the Giants scored the touchdown, and Aaron Rodgers dumped it off across the middle to James Starks.
Yes.
I thought he caught the ball, established himself as a runner, and was making a football move. I did not think it was an incomplete pass. I know that, but I'm saying a lot of people have argued that the Giants should have challenged that because it appeared to be an incomplete pass. I've watched the replay, and I went back and I watched it this morning. Paul, every time I watch it, he turns, he makes a football move, he establishes himself as a runner. And that's what you have to do to apply it as a catch.
No question.
I didn't think there was anything to challenge and nothing to be overturned under those circumstances.
Correct.
So he then coughs up the ball. It goes into Kelvin Shepard's chest. It falls through Kelvin Shepard's chest, goes back on the ground, and Starks jumps on it. I mean, it's an extremely bizarre play no matter what angle you look at it at.
Well, go back to how the New Orleans game ended last year. Bizarre beyond belief. You know, ball popping free, and then, you know, wing gets called for the face mask. And
sets up the field goal.
That's how they lose the game. I mean,
those little things.
Some of the freakiest stuff you'd ever want to see. You can't make this stuff up. And again, I want to say this. Being on the field, I got a different perspective as to a lot of these things. When that ball popped free, and I knew it was a fumble, and it took them about 45 seconds to uncover the pile to find out who
like
actually had the
ball. 75 guys in there, yeah.
And, of course, the Packers think they got it. A couple of Giants thought they had it. The referees weren't saying anything. So I really knew who had the ball. It was only after we were done with the postgame show, and I saw John Schmelk after they were cleaning out the locker room, and he said, did you know that Kelvin Shepard had a chance at that fumble? And I said, well, not from where I was standing on the
bench. Because you didn't see the replay on the TV.
And no, I could see a replay.
Understandable, yeah.
And the replay that they showed at the field was a different angle, and so I didn't see that. And so he said, oh, yeah, the ball popped right up into his chest. It was right there. I said, no, you got to be kidding me, really? He's like, no, it was right there. I said, well, then that's typical for the kind of bizarre stuff that has happened to this team.
Extremely bizarre. And speaking of the takeaway discussion, another big difference is the fact that you pick off Aaron Rodgers twice.
On one deflection.
But, hey, it's an interception.
But Jenkins, two picks. And the second one was a coverage pick.
And he had great coverage throughout the game. I mean, he had some knockaways. He had three passes defense.
Very good.
Solid game for him. No criticism there. I mean, you're really putting him under the magnifying glass if you have a problem with his performance. But the point I was going to make is, okay, so you get the takeaways. And this is something that Giants fans, the team's been yearning for. First two defensive takeaways, Paul. Takeaways, though, do not solve your offensive issues. And what happened is, Paul, they scored 3 points.
Yes.
One field goal off of those two takeaways.
Yes.
And there was a stretch, and I wrote it down, when the Giants' field position, this was in the first half, they had two drives that started far in their own territory, and then one in Green Bay territory, Paul, and then they didn't wind up with anything other than two field goals. And let me see if I could find the numbers here. Here it is. They had one drive that started at their own 45, ended with a field goal. Then they had another one at the Giants' 41. Ended with a punt, and then the Green Bay 40, which ended with a field goal. So 6 points on three straight possessions where you started at your own 45, your own 41, and in Green Bay territory, and you only walk away with two field goals.
But continue, Lance. Next possession, Giants start at their own 39, and they fumble it away. Then they start the third quarter. Okay, forget the first one. They start at their 28, but they start at their own 47, field goal. The 49... punt.
Great field position all throughout this game.
Average field position, Giants, 38-yard line. Packers, 26.
Couldn't capitalize. That's a huge advantage.
That's what happens when you lose both sides of the trenches. Please don't give me anything else. That's what happened here. They lost in the trenches. The Packers took care of the ball along the line of scrimmage on both sides. That's it. It's simple, folks. Don't make this more complicated than it has to be.
So the Packers beat the Giants 23-16 on Sunday Night Football. For those of you watching on Twitter, we invite you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. You can also chime in using hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. I know a lot of you want to weigh in on the phone lines. We're going to try to get to as many calls, as many tweets as humanly possible. I know a lot of people want to weigh in, obviously, on last night's game. So without further ado, let's start things off with Ed in Maryland. Ed, what's happening? Ed dropped. All right, how about Izzy in Virginia? Izzy, what's happening?
What's going on, fellas?
Hi, how we doing, Izzy?
Hey, Paulie, you bottom lined it for me. You bottom lined it, but I'm going to just keep my comments just kind of simple and to the point.
Go ahead.
Our neglect to upgrade this offensive line is rearing its head. I say that because anything on the offensive line dictates, and defensive line as well, but the offense, it dictates what's going on. When the Packers had 8 minutes in the first quarter, the first drive, the Giants only had the ball for a minute and 47 seconds.
Right, yeah.
That gives the defense back on the field. They're tired.
They played over 36 minutes, the defense, last night.
You wonder why JPP and Vernon is tired. These guys are not even getting a chance to –
They did mix in a few other defensive linemen last night, more so than we saw in the first four games. And I believe it was very early in the contest, like on the second possession for the Packers.
Vernon and JPP played 70 snaps and 72 snaps, the two guys. There were 80 total snaps for the Packers offense. So they played most of them. The only two guys to play all the snaps were Adams and Collins on defense. The two safeties.
Okay. All right. That's understandable. And I'm going to get to my last point because I know other callers want to get on. But if we don't address, I don't think one player is bigger than a team. If we don't address going forward, because the first quarter of the season is pretty much like an extension to the preseason to me. So once we got that over with and the first three games we played, they was mediocre defensive linemen. So now we're playing against the big boys and it's showing, it's highlighting, and it's rearing its head, like I said. Eric Flowers, I'm not going to knock him. I'm not going to harp on him because I know all the rest of the callers are going to do that. But Eric Flowers, when we initially drafted Eric Flowers, this is my opinion. I think we need to go back to the essence or the beginning of what the purpose of drafting Ereck Flowers was. Before Will Beattie got hurt, he was supposed to be the left tackle. Ereck Flowers was going to be the right tackle. Going forward, I understand the Giants is adamant about keeping him on the left side and everything like that, but I'm just saying as a Giants fan and as a past fan, just wanting my team to win, I'm quite sure the whole organization want to win.
Sure.
If the whole organization is the point of putting the fifth trophy in the case, we need to address the situation, and it needs to be accountability. It needs to be accountability from the coaches. It needs to be accountability to the players. And once again, I think, in my opinion, even if you just try it, because leaving Ereck Flowers out there against top-notch defensive ends, he's not getting the job done. And going forward, the rest of the division is getting better. I don't know if anybody else is noticing. We're degressing. We're regressing. We're not evolving. We're not upgrading. But anyway, my last point is, I think we just need to go back to the initial purpose of what we drafted Ereck Flowers for and just see how that works. Thank you, guys.
All right, Izzy, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
It's a fair call, and I think one of the Giants' options, and they will have to mull it this week, is does Will Beattie get inserted into the lineup? And if so, is it right tackle or left tackle? And do either Flowers or Hart potentially come out of the lineup for a game or two just to see what happens, just to mix things up potentially? I will say this, okay. The Giants' offensive line, up until last night, I think had performed, and Howard Cross mentioned this with me the other day on the show, had performed actually above expectations, okay? Above, A-B-O-V-E, for four games. Wasn't that they were awesome, but they were pretty good for four games. Eli was standing upright.
Well, I said right? Only 10 quarterback hits, Paul, in the first four games.
Do the math there. I don't have a problem with that.
I don't have a problem with either. That's actually one of the lowest totals amongst quarterbacks who have started three games this season.
Right.
That was
so,
up there.
So, and by the way, Vikings game, zero sacks
against the team that led the NFL coming in with 15.
Four times?
Three.
Three?
Three times against the Vikings.
So, folks, understand, I get what happened last night. I understand all of that. But before we start painting big whole walls over again, understand that this was a crack here, but it doesn't mean the whole wall's got to come down. I know you're not happy. Nobody is. But I have to admit to the facts because you guys know how I feel about offensive linemen. And you know how I feel about the trenches. The Giants' offensive line has been above expectations and, quite frankly, pretty good for four games. Now they've had a really bad game. That's what it is. That's the facts. So let's not just say, oh, the offensive line's been terrible all year. And now they got to change the whole thing. And no, the facts are the facts.
I agree with you, Paul, and that's why I actually tweeted that out right before we went on. That stat about 10 quarterback hits in the first four games, 5 against the Packers, to at least put things in perspective. The narrative seems to happen, and this is always after a bad game, Paul. This has been a continuation for the entire season. That always becomes the narrative
after every loss. The first thing you do Monday morning is erase the word perspective out of the dictionary.
Correct.
Because it no longer exists.
Yeah.
You know, you get your little whiteout pen, and whiteout, perspective, does not exist anymore.
Well, and it also relates to what you and I were talking about on the radio pregame show last night when I threw out the stat about Beckham's penalties. And I don't want to get off topic, but the narrative last week was right. It seemed as if he had about 10 unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, right? He only had one unsportsmanlike conduct penalty in the first four games. So it's about not overreacting to one contest. With that being said, though, as we've documented,
the team is 2-3.
Correct. The team is 2-3, and the offensive line has to improve.
Yes.
I don't think anybody is going to disagree with that.
Absolutely.
Whether or not they look to Will Beattie remains to be seen. You know, keep in mind, Beattie is still learning the offense, but you figure now that we're 5 weeks in,
he's now
comfortable enough where I think you can move him around and put him on either side of the offensive line.
I don't think there's any question that at this point, if he's a viable option and he should be up to speed, you know, they have to consider it at least. Whether or not they do it is another story.
But it has
maybe
to be in the conversation.
They might go into practice this week.
And
they
test
might,
it out.
They might say that.
Yeah. Let him get reps.
Let him get his reps. Maybe start splitting the reps up with one of the guys. We also, by the way, don't know about what Marshall Newhouse's calf situation is. He's been out now for a few weeks. And again, let's talk about Bobby Hart for a second. First game he played, gave up a sack and a quarterback hit, and was okay. Second game he played against Minnesota, he was good. Bobby Hart was good in Minnesota. Last night, not good. Mixed bag. You know, you don't just, you know, throw the guy out for one game.
No, you need to have a sample size to evaluate.
Right.
So now you got three games under your belt with Bobby Hart, and you say, okay, are we content with what we see at right tackle?
You got three different games out of him. You got okay, you got good, and you got bad.
Got a mix. So I don't know. Does that give you a true evaluation, Paul?
I don't know.
The fourth one. But Marshall Newhouse is going to be back in the conversation when he's healthy, and then Will Beattie is an option.
And we just don't know when Newhouse is going to be healthy.
I have to wait and see what the
practice report looks
like.
I honestly don't know the answer to that. Maybe he practices this week. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know the answer to that. I just know that to this point he is not. So he has not been an option. I would add one other thing here to this whole thing. And I know you have a note here on your screen.
Yeah.
You know, the Ravens just fired their offensive coordinator, Mark Trestman. So that's an organization that I think they had some expectations going into the season that they would be a playoff team. And now I believe Steve Smith got hurt.
He got hurt.
Yesterday.
Ankle injury, yes.
And he's already, I think they said.
Did they rule him out? I don't know about that,
good.
Paul.
Not good.
Not good because he didn't return to the game and he left early.
Right.
Clearly,
so odds apparently are not good that he's going to be playing on Sunday against the Giants. And now they've got this offensive coordinator situation. Marty Morgenweg, I believe.
Morgenweg, correct.
Morgenweg,
he's taking over for Trestman.
Yeah, he's coming in. Former Lions.
And with the Jets,
at one
too.
Point. Yes. So, you know, this is also a team now that's reeling coming into MetLife Stadium.
Two straight losses after a 3-1 start.
So understand that, you know, as bad as you think things are for the Giants right now, things are not going well for the Ravens. So you also have to take a deep breath and say, okay, just try to stabilize the ship, and maybe the Giants will be better off than the team that's struggling coming in.
And it's going to be interesting chess match-wise because you say to yourself, well, we've seen Mark Trestman's offense on film for the first few games. Do they all of a sudden dig deep into their bag of tricks this week with a new offensive coordinator? It's at least going to be something that Spags is going to have to be thinking in the back of his mind.
Sure.
How much of a different look will the Ravens present this week compared to what was documented over the first few games? All right, let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow. Thanks so much for tuning into Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Marco is in Connecticut. Marco, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Hi. Hello, Marco. How's things with you?
I'm all right. There's a lot to digest here, so I'm just going to give my thoughts, and please jump in at any point, and I won't take too long. I agree with Paul. It's visible on TV, and if you know the team well, the effort is there. Appreciate what the secondary was able to come through last night and able to do against Rodgers and the type of receivers. I even commend the running backs that have been playing well, given the injuries that we have. I think the talent is here. I think what's going on is we have a schematic problem, and it's week after week. The teams are looking at us, and they're doing the same thing, and I'll get to what I think, but the talent is there. You look at Minnesota and Dallas combined 9-1. Okay, they have suspended players. They have major, major players on IR for both teams. The Cowboys' defense was a huge talking point in the offseason. It doesn't matter. These teams are rolling along. But let me get to the Giants. Teams are game-planning the same way every week against us. They're daring Eli and McAdoo to beat us. And they're just dropping their safeties. They're taking away the deep ball. They're taking away the big play for Eli and Beckham and the receivers.
Two safeties. And that's what they're using.
That's what they're using. And they're making these patterns. They're making Eli have to get some time, develop these patterns, and now you're seeing the offensive line break down when we can't hold up for this amount of time. Now, this is what I think. I don't want this just to be on Flowers and his play. He has certainly regressed, and the team has come out, and they made a stand in the offseason saying that he is the left tackle of the future. I don't know how they're going to spin it going forward or what the plan is. They will take care of that. But McAdoo, from the day he got hired here, it's been all you've heard about is discipline and poise, discipline and poise. Now, Lance, you said about Odell Beckham not having so many personal conduct penalties. But what I'm seeing from the team is these are time-sensitive penalties that are happening for this team. And what I mean by that is when we need to get the team off, a specific play is not coming to mind, but when I'm watching the game, I'm saying here's a huge third down, and then something happens, or usually or the
Marco, let me just jump in to provide an example. I think you do bring up a valid point, and I'm not necessarily going to bring up a penalty, but I'll bring up a third down conversion by the Packers in last night's game. It was 3rd and 9, Paul, and there was a pass to Randall Cobb, and there were 3 Giants defenders in the vicinity, and they should have all been in position, Marco, to bring him down and force the Packers to punt.
Right.
Instead, he deflects off of a few defenders, winds up picking up the first down. So it's the combination, Marco, of your point, the penalties coming at the worst possible time, but also some breakdowns defensively, missed tackles, which have also given Green Bay new life.
I've said this a thousand times. Once you get that missed tackle stat up in the 7, 8, 9 range, or God forbid double digits, you are probably going to lose. And if you stayed up last night to watch the postgame show on MSG, I had Kelvin Shepherd on outside the locker room. I think it was the last interview that I'd done of the night. And I flat out said it to him. The missed tackles, it was off the charts. And by the way, it's been a common denominator in the 3-game losing streak. And he said, you're absolutely right. And this was the worst game for missed tackles that we've had all season. I mean, that's another fundamental football 101 old school rule. Missed tackles will destroy you. And I didn't even count the number totally last night. I got to go back.
But there was certainly a number, and a number that jumped out at key times.
I guarantee you it was double digits last night.
I would not be surprised. And then also what I remember from the Vikings game, and Marco, we'll let you continue. I know you want to make a few other points. Remember the 2nd and 18, and Adam Thielen gets the pass in the right flat. Jonathan Casillas misses the tackle, and Thielen converts on an 18-yard pass.
Yeah.
I mean, it's things like that. They're showing up at the worst times in every game. Continue, Marco.
Okay, so here's my last point. McAdoo will, and then going into this week, he's going to say this game is week 6 out of 16, right? No, I completely disagree. There is so much urgency going into this week. McAdoo and Eli need to do better. Plain and simple, they need to do better, because even with the injuries on this team, we are not an injury-riddled team like we've been last year and the year before. There is talent here. Even with the guys that are gone, there is a lot of talent here. The offense needs to do better. It just needs to be better. Let me talk about the Ravens next week, because this is going to come up. This is, guys, I don't care. I'm going to make it a big deal. This is the game of the year. I think this is going to make or break our season. You're off a 3-game losing streak. You're back at home at 1 o'clock against a Baltimore team who has lost. Really, really, they've gotten their hearts broken the last 2 weeks. They're going to come in, and let me tell you, and this is exactly what's going to happen. They have tight ends, and they're going to put their tight ends right against our defense like every team has done this year. And we've struggled against tight ends, and they're going to do that, and they have a nasty run-stopping defense that will dare Eli again to go out and make plays. It is the same challenge. It's coming in differently. And now they present unfortunately, they present now this obstacle of a new offensive coordinator we're scheming against. Must-win game for the Giants. Must win. No doubt about it. They cannot lose 4 games in a row. Guys, I'm hoping for the best. I think it's not being a Monday morning quarterback to say that people should be worried. There's problems here. They're not huge, huge issues. They could get figured out. You have the talent, man. There's talent everywhere. McAdoo's got to do better.
All right, Marco, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in.
I'm with Marco on this, Lance, in that if they can scuffle up a win at home against Baltimore, then they go to London to play the Rams. And, again, a team that you would believe, based on the talent on the roster, they should be able to beat, certainly be competitive with, but I think they should beat. All of a sudden, now you go into the bye, and you're 4-3 again, and you have a winning record. And now you can take a breath, go into the bye week, and try to reset yourself, and then – you know, the season is not lost.
Knowing that you then have 3 straight home games right after the bye, too.
Yeah, that's true, too.
So that would obviously put you in a good position. But I agree with Marco where, you know, what happens a lot in the National Football League, Paul, you look at a team that's struggling, the Ravens. They've lost 2 in a row. They fired their OC. Oh, this is going to be a golden opportunity. The Ravens are a top-10 defense across the board, number 1. They've got a lot of solid playmakers up front. They have Eric Weddle, an experienced safety, on the back end. And, you know, this is a team that lost 28-27 to the Raiders on a last-second touchdown from Derek Carr and was very much in the thick of the things with the Washington Redskins. It was a 16-10 game, and Paul, Joe Flacco, I don't know if you saw this, he threw a touchdown pass later in the game to Perriman, and it was overturned by replay. So,
well, 1 foot down.
There you
go. The other was out.
The ball bounces. The legs work differently. Who knows? They're that close to having a 5-0 record at this point.
Okay, and what have they done now? Despite the fact they've been that close, they decide, oh, my God, the roof is caving, and then they fire an offensive coordinator. I mean, there are many ways to react to adversity.
Of course.
They've decided to pull the plug on an OC.
Now, that's a track record, I would argue, though, that Harbaugh has had. Remember, in 2012, they fired Cam Cameron late in the season. That was the year they won the Super Bowl.
Yes.
They brought in Caldwell. They promoted him. It worked out. Doesn't mean it's always going to work out, but they have a track record of doing it, so it doesn't necessarily surprise me that that was their reaction. Let's head back to the lines. We got Dre in Atlanta. Dre, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, Lance? Hey, P-Dot. How's everything going?
Do well, Dre. What do you got for us?
No, much. Hey, I'm not about to jump off the bridge, but I will tell you, it's an understatement to say that Eli had a bad game. Yes, the pocket broke down, especially from his blind side, but he moved up in the pocket. He had his hot reads, and he threw it behind him. Now, that one drop by Victor Cruz was way behind him. His momentum was going forward, and he had to dive back. And, I'm a firm believer you put your hands on it, you catch it. But he was right there. There was another third down pass to Shepard that he threw behind Shepard. Had it, you know,
understood.
The whole night, all the passes were behind the receivers.
He was consistently off the mark. He was consistently off the mark. I can't put it any more straight than that. He was consistently off the mark. But when you talk about worst game, horrible, terrible, no, those games are four interception games. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not talking about like that. I'm not talking about.
But that's my point. That's my point.
Eli just throwing it to everybody. But
that's my point. I mean, you know, when Darren Sharper was playing, Eli Manning had some really, really, really bad games. This was not in that category. Okay, he was off all night, but it wasn't like disastrous. It wasn't like they couldn't overcome Eli's inaccuracies last night because they could have and should have. If they had done better in the trenches. That's what it all comes down to, my friend.
I agree. You're right, and I totally agree. But I will say this, okay? There are times, I think the issue is, yes, he was off mark, but I think Eli has lost faith on that blind side, and he's hearing footsteps, and he's dropping the passes, throwing the passes a lot quicker than he wants to, because it was a pass where even when he felt the pressure coming, he still had Odell open, and he still threw it at his feet. You know, he's just so observant of getting a sack and just throwing the ball away. But Eli, the collectors, our offense will go where Eli goes. Eli, you know, starts feeling comfortable. The passes will start coming out because he saw the comfort in the first two games when he was slinging the rock. Now, for whatever reason, you know, he's not having any faith in the protection. You know, because even with the that one pass, you know, to Bobby Rainey, Pugh had a great block as he was pulling, came around and knocked the linebacker out and sprung Bobby Rainey for the 18-yard pass.
I mean,
but that's it.
I guess the only thing I want to say about Eli, did Will Tye have a chance to catch that ball?
Sure did.
You know?
Yeah.
Again.
He turned the wrong way and didn't put himself in the best position to catch the ball because he really should have continued to run straight, put his arms out, and it would have been right in his hand.
And I don't know how much Lance pointed to that as the turning point, and I think he's right. I don't know how much it would have changed or not changed, but, yeah, it wasn't the perfect pass. It was inaccurate. It was off. I get all of that. But, receiver, make the play for your quarterback. Finish the play for your quarterback, because right now, you know, Eli is taking much too much heat for a play that could have been finished on the other end. That's all I'm saying.
It was a bit too high, but at the same time, I think Will Tye could have made a better effort to catch the football. So I think both parties deserve responsibility on that play. I think that's the best way you can assess it.
And that's why I'm not throwing Eli over the boat, and I know there's a lot of critics out there who want to do that, and You're not going to get that out of me because I see the reality.
Well, I'm going to tell you like this. I'm not throwing Eli over the boat. I'm just pretty much stating, you know, that obvious. He was off. you know, and it seemed like
and that's what
football,
and you and I are on the same page.
Right, and the stats even right. reflect that. Even if you didn't watch the game and you see the completion percentage, I think most people would assess, yeah, he was off, no doubt about it.
Right, with my last point, you know, P-Dot, you can't be any more right when it comes to the battle of the trenches. I'm old school too, you know, and I believe that if you can control the line on either side of the ball, you could do whatever you want. They were pushing our offensive line with just four. They were just rushing four, doing what we want to do.
Yeah.
You know, and we are, because our defensive line couldn't get pressure, it exposed our deficiencies in the secondary. I mean, they picked on Hunter. They picked on Wade. Like, that one pass, how do you lose your footing?
You know, I know the one you're talking about.
When he slipped.
It seemed like everybody is out of position.
I know the one you're talking about. Wade just fell.
To the ball.
He just fell. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Dre, you know the one that I really feel bad about? The first touchdown, Trevin Wade was there, and Rodgers put that ball right to the low sideline in the end zone where only Jordy Nelson could get to it, and Jordy Nelson dives out, reaches out, and
great catch.
Okay, and that's a hell of a throw, and a hell of a catch, and pretty darn good coverage, and that was right in front of me. I was right there, and I'm saying to myself, I feel bad for Trevin Wade because there's just nothing else he could have done about that. That's two guys on the Packers making a play. And, again, we told you this last week, not enough guys on the Giants are making the play. Play above the X's and the O's.
I was just going to throw
that
term out.
Finish the play.
I agree.
Get the 50-50 ball. The Giants are still not doing that, and that's why they've lost three in a row.
And, Dre, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Jordy Nelson put on a nice in-and-out move before he dove out. He went in, and then he cut back out, and then reached out to make the
catch.
But,
again, I can't kill Trevin Wade for that.
I thought, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought it was Eli Apple on him.
Oh, it was Apple.
I thought it was Apple.
It was.
Paul, on that play. Yeah.
You're
no, Trevin
right.
Wade was involved in a lot of plays, but that one Apple was covering
you
Jordy
are right.
Nelson.
It was Eli Apple.
And then he went in on Apple, and then he went back out.
Because I remember after Nelson caught the ball, and Apple, like, he just shook his head like, oh, man, I can't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you got to tip your cap
to
the opposition.
It was.
Yeah.
Folks, my point stands, but you are right. It was Apple. And that's the thing. Think about the last three games. I want you to make a list. And any fan out there who doesn't either believe what I'm saying or doesn't understand what I'm saying, make a list each of the last three games and say, okay, how many of those kinds of plays, the above the X's and the O's plays, the opposition's made and the Giants have made. And in each of the last three, it's a one-sided list. It's just that simple, okay? Nelson catches that pass. Ty doesn't catch his. And by the way, Ty wasn't defended on the play. Nelson was.
Big difference.
I don't want to keep picking on Will Ty. He's a nice guy, and he's caught a lot of passes here. It just happens to be the most obvious example of what I'm talking about.
Well, I'm going to throw another one in, and in terms of one play all of a sudden going the wrong way and then the Giants having an opportunity.
Odell made a play, by the way, at the end of the game.
Correct.
The touchdown.
Made a touchdown. That would classify that.
Make it a play. It was about the only one they made all night.
Couldn't recover the fumble. If Shepard makes that play, you know, I think you'd maybe throw that in that category as well, because
offensively,
that could be a game-changing.
Defensively, Jenkins had two picks.
Well, and that's what I was going to get to. What I wanted to make a point about the Jenkins, if you remember, before the first interception, Paul, Rodgers throws over the middle. Randall Cobb has a touchdown. Now, on that play, you had two penalties that offset one another. You had the illegal shift on Green Bay, and then you had 12 men on the field against the Giants.
Yes.
So then the Packers had to redo that, and then all of a sudden the deflected ball goes
correct
into the hands of Janoris Jenkins. But what did the Giants do with that takeaway? Nothing.
Zippo.
That could have been another game-changing moment. Those are the things you have to capitalize on. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Menno. Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, recapping the Packers' 23-16 victory over the Giants on Sunday Night Football. Charlie is in Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Charlie.
How we doing, Charlie?
It is a blue Monday. I've been hopping on this O-line since long time ago. I think the experiment with Eric Flowers should be over. I think he's shown he doesn't have technique, and until he learns it, he should be on the bench. We have Will Beatty. Use him. And if I was the GM, we could save our season by making our line good, if not great. Joe Thomas, they want to move him. Cleveland does. Give them what they want.
Charlie, they don't. Charlie.
This guy is
Charlie,
an all-pro, Pro Bowl.
Time, no, Charlie, time out. Those rumors are old. I checked with someone in the Cleveland organization. They told me that Hugh Jackson absolutely adores Joe Thomas. He believes he is a building block and a positive influence in the locker room. And he told management, under no circumstances are we to trade him. So that's not happening. No, but those are rumors and they're old. Those are rumors and they're old.
If that isn't available, fine. But I think he is going to get traded before the deadline, and we should go after him. Because if you put Joe Thomas and Will Beattie as our two tackles, all of a sudden we have a good offensive line. And Eli said in his presser, he said, they're cutting off our quick passes. So that means I have to hold on to the ball longer to get to watch things develop, and he doesn't have the time. He does not trust his blindside, he does not trust his tackles, and that is a lot of the reason why he is throwing the ball the way he's throwing it.
Charlie, I'm with you. Listen.
But it's 90% is the problem is our O-line. I said it back in March. If we didn't fix it,
Charlie,
we would have problems.
Charlie, you're talking problems. To Mr. Offensive Line here, okay? You're talking to Mr. Offensive Line. Nobody wants to build the line better than me or the trenches better than me. But what I'm telling you is, unfortunately, the information that I've gotten is that Joe Thomas is not being traded.
That's
now,
right.
if you want to tell me, and you know
tackle.
What? And we said,
Charlie,
he said I was listening to
Charlie, the point is, we were talking about Beattie earlier.
We said that was an option,
didn't we? And
we said
it's possible during the course of this week at practice they may be exploring that. But there's no indication right now that that's what they're planning to do. But I agree with you. That should be something that could be in the conversation.
It has to be considered, Charlie.
And also Marshall Newhouse's status, if he may be available next week, that could obviously change the dynamics of the offensive line as well.
Charlie, we're actually on the same page here. It's just that you seem to want to be argumentative about it. We're with you.
I think where you're not being feasible and not being realistic, Charlie, is exploring these constant trade options, you know, and thinking that you bring in a guy, you acquire him, and he's going to be a savior overnight. You know, that I don't think is realistic.
I'll say this, and Charlie, bear with us half a second now. I will say this. There's nothing wrong with putting a phone call in.
No, not at all.
As an organization, to ever call another organization and say, listen, I read in the paper or I read online that you've got player X, and he's really good, and we've heard that he might be on the block. Is that true? Because if so, we'd like to talk to you about him. There's nothing wrong with that. So, Charlie, in that regard, I understand, you know, your desire to do so, and that's fine. So we're all in agreement on that. Please go ahead.
Caught that ball, and I hope they use Adams more. They started. He had a couple good
caught a
pass,
couple
late in the game.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
I hope they, but they need to bring in a veteran tight end. I don't know who's left out there. But there's got to be another tight end we can bring in because I think Donnell's going to be out for a while with that concussion, especially with his neck problem that he had. So we need to bring somebody else in. And the only other thing I'm going to say, Kevin Shepherd had 3 assists in this game. I still say
Kelvin.
We should have kept Brinkley. He should have had that fumble. Would have changed. We would at least have had a chance to win the game, and we didn't. I don't understand some of these personnel decisions that we make. But, you know, John said, you know, I hope the boulder doesn't start rolling down the mountain. He said that on Friday. The problem is the boulder's already rolling down the mountain. This was the game we needed to win, to stop all this slide and all the Beckham stuff and everything, and we didn't do it, and we should have won this game. The Packers weren't the Packers yesterday.
They did. They struggled.
We had so
yeah.
many opportunities. We kicked, 3 field goals. If we just had one or two of them as touchdowns, I don't know why. I know why. Just like you said, Paul, it's the trenches. Our offense can't do anything because our offensive line can't block anybody. And we only had 55 yards rushing the ball. We can't even rush the ball.
Well, keep in mind, Charlie,
defense.
Of course, that's what I was going to say. They were number 1 in the NFL. They only allowed 43 rushing yards. No team had more than 50. against the Packers so far this season. I can't say I'm surprised by those results.
You know, every time we've done a screen pass, I think we've done three this year, and
they ran a bunch of them yesterday. Perkins had one.
Perkins had a
big
hit rating, yeah.
Yesterday. Remember.
They ran several. In fact, I talked to Bobby Rainey on the field. It aired on the MSG postgame last night, and he talked about that. They actually got something going with the screen yesterday.
That was probably their most productive throws.
Perkins and Rainey both show some quickness and some elusiveness on that kind of play. The problem with that is you got
to
set it up. But you got to set it up, Charlie, but I understand.
I don't know why we're not getting to the quarterback.
Yeah, that's a mystery to me, too.
We're getting some pressure, but we're not, you know, we're just not getting there. But our secondary played really well, considering, and we kept them to field goals most of the time, which is really good. And if our offense had played like they should have played, even with our defense struggling with getting pressure, we still should have won that game easy.
I hear you,
Charlie. They were certainly in the hunt, Charlie. And listen, we got to let you go.
You're going to get tired.
All right, Charlie. Listen,
that's what happens.
We got to let you go. I want to get to a few more other callers.
That's one of his better calls, actually.
Yeah, I mean,
he made a lot of points.
I think he recovered.
He made a lot of points that had logic behind them and made some sense.
Well, I also have something else to cheer up, Charlie. The production team wasted their time last week in putting together a little open in honor of Charlie.
The production team, John Schmelk.
Well, I say that it's the production team. It's a one-man production team.
It is.
Let's just see what he put together. I have not listened to this yet.
I have.
A short thing.
Oh, you have?
Well, let's take a listen here.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Hallelujah.
Losing his mind.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right in the hat.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we go.
See, John's intent is to have that played when Charlie is about to start his phone call,
well,
not after his
The point is, it's a Monday, so we set the tone for the week, and now this will be his intro moving forward. We just wanted to test the waters. Plus, he was a very emotional. I didn't want to get him too worked up before the phone call. Yeah.
He was very logical today.
Yeah, no doubt about
it. So that particular open...
Well, we're going to play it regardless.
Is more for a gentleman who's on the edge.
Yeah, but logical is a term used very loosely when Charlie calls up.
I don't want you to pick on him today because he was actually,
are you kidding me?
He was.
He's going to tweet me 1,000 times anyway.
But he was in bounds today. When he's out of bounds, I'll let him know.
There were no penalty flags issued today.
He was in bounds today.
Yes, but we did have to lower him.
Yes, we did.
So that was somewhat of a violation. Okay. Somewhat of a violation. With that being said, Naeem is in Newark. Naeem, what's happening?
Hello. How are you?
Hello.
How are we doing, Naeem?
Hi.
All right. How you guys doing?
Doing well.
We're okay.
So what do you have for
us? Great. It's been a long time since I called in, man. But, you know, a lot of guys touched on some of the points that I called to actually touch on. And you guys answered, you know, you guys pretty much answered most. That leads me to some of the questions now going toward the defensive side of the ball. You know, I look at JPP and I look at Vernon playing the edges, but I don't see any other schemes that they actually doing, especially on third downs. I remember you could have guys standing up. You know, somebody had a skill set of JPP who can actually get around players and who can actually bull rush, whether he's standing up or, you know, just stunting or whatever. But I don't see anything other than them just, you know, keeping their hand in the dirt. What's going on with that?
Yesterday, the Giants a number of times stood up JPP. When if you go back and take a look, I saw him standing up more at his defensive end spot than I'd seen him all season previously.
Okay.
And so I saw that as a new wrinkle, if you will, in the pass rush. There were a few times, not very many. I'd have to go back. You could count them on one hand where – they did move him and Vernon around. In fact, one time I remember seeing Odighizuwa came out to left end, and JPP slid down into left defensive tackle. Hankins was the right defensive tackle, and then Vernon was on the other side. You know,
the NASCAR package, so to speak,
whatever you want to call it. They did a few of those things, not a lot, and I think part of the frustration is, when you try to do something that's away from what your basic philosophy is, and that doesn't work either, you tend to go back to your basic philosophy and say, okay, listen, enough with the experiments. We tried a couple of things. They didn't work out so well. We didn't get that early success that we wanted. Go back to our basic and core philosophy and just tell those guys up front, hey, you just have to do better. And that's what I think happens sometimes. You know, if the new tweaking of the schemes doesn't provide you with immediate results, you tend to go back to your core.
Well, and the other thing to add to that, you know, a lot of people have brought up, Paul, you know, why are the Giants not blitzing as much? Remember, they were blitzing when that secondary was fully healthy. You can't put DRC in the slot and expect him to blitz when, as you described, I mean, he can barely make it through a game right now.
I'm gonna tell you, you guys remember Mickey Rivers when he played baseball for the Yankees? And he was a premier base stealer, but then when he walked, he was kind of bow-legged and almost walked with a limp. DRC. I'm telling you, whenever that ball was not being snapped, he was walking around really.
They had to work on it.
Walking is a liberal word. He was hobbling, man.
Yeah, absolutely. But look, I'm not giving up on the defense at all. I'm definitely not giving up on the defense. And actually, I'm one of the few that actually like what we got going on. Last night I looked at the player Eli Manning, just like all the other callers who have been calling in, and I see that he's a little, you know, bit off his target. But, you know, I don't make no excuses for a veteran, whether there's a weak side or not. You know, to me, he's standing straight up like a tower. Like, you know, he pretty much looking receivers down. I'm not saying he's focusing just on one receiver, and I know it's hard to get out. But I'm looking at some of his mechanics, you know what I'm saying, as a fan. You know, I played the game. You know, I'm looking at his mechanics. I don't see too much in him. You know, last night he was trying to be just a little mobile. But to me, I think that he can actually make it a little better for the receivers. Like he standing in the pocket.
He knows that.
He get himself killed. But his accuracy, you know, we know Eli was never an accurate quarterback to begin with. But the reality is that he's not really putting the ball where a receiver can continue their stride. You know, they got to make these acrobatic catches. And, you know, to me, it's not the left tackle. You know, it's definitely not the left tackle. The left tackle get beat. Yes, everybody going to get beat in the NFL. We know that. These guys is great. You know, we're looking at some of the best athletes in the world.
Okay, but you know what? Just give me a second. I'm going to let you finish. I got to go back, though. You made a statement a couple of seconds ago about him not putting the ball where it needs to be so that they can make yards after the catch. Going into this game, okay, the Giants – still had the three receivers with the most receiving yards of anyone in the league. And by the way, and I'm not joking with you now, most of those passes were short, medium-range passes where they were getting yards after the catch. The big complaint about the Giants' offense is that they haven't been throwing the ball downfield. They've been relying on their guys to catch the 12-yard pass and turning it into an 18-yard gain. So I just gotta correct you on that one statement there,
because up until last night, no problem at all. You know,
okay.
That's your opinion, but I still look at it as a problem. Now, but then again, I look at the receivers, right? I look at how the offense is actually built. We have great receivers. Any coach in this NFL league would love to have those three receivers on their team. Okay, those three receivers can do some spectacular things. And I see now, you know, of course, you know, we all know about the Odell Beckham thing. You know, I'm not even going to get into that, you know. But I look at if you're moving him around, but you got two other dynamic receivers there. I don't see Cruz as being a deep threat. I watched him come across the slant last night. I watched the pass behind him. I've seen all of that. But then again, I'm looking at can we truly keep him in a slot? Why we can't keep him in a slot, you know, knowing that we don't see what Cruz could do in a slot before this kid coming to the league, you know what I'm saying? Shepherd kid coming to the league. Not saying Shepherd's not good enough, but I think Tavares King is another somebody you can split out that can beat somebody on a fly or, you know, make a few moves, you know. To me, Eli just got to be more mobile, you know.
Well, I mean, that may mean
I still think we can win this division. Don't get me wrong. I think we can win this division, but I think all those tweaks, we need to have a little more schemes. We have a little more wrinkles. We need to get our athletes to play ball more better, play to their strengths. You know, the system thing is works, yes. But when we went on that, when we went on this Super Bowl run back in 2007, we had great players, but we utilized their strengths. We utilized their talents. You know, I watched OC go from one thing, this one. But here, we just keeping these two guys' hands in the dirt, and I think you shouldn't give up on that. I think that's what's going to hurt us. Our linebackers is good. but they're not great.
All right, Nadeem. Well, listen, we're going to cut you off there just because we want to get to a few more phone calls, but appreciate you weighing in.
Good call. Good call.
In terms of moving personnel around, specifically on offense, you know, keep in mind, they ran a trickery play with Odell Beckham yesterday. That wound up losing.
He did move some, too.
He did move some, but the point is you got to be careful with what you wish for is my point, because Beckham wound up being sacked on that play, and it didn't really do much of anything for them.
The wide receiver option.
Correct, yes. Exactly. So, I mean, it's one thing to be creative. It's another thing if you're just digging real deep and you're just hoping that a prayer is going to be answered and it doesn't always come to fruition. I think the other thing when you look at the offense right now, Paul, is the fact that, you know, the yards have been there at least prior to last night. Problem is the yards are not equating to points. That's the biggest issue right now.
Right.
The Giants came in as the number sixth overall offense through the first four games. But then you look, they're only averaging 18 points a game. For the sixth overall offense, you should have much more than 18 points a game.
Well, see, and that's why, okay, that's why it's so easy for Eli's critics to point such a finger at him and make him the target of all of this. When really, when you get down to it, okay, so he hasn't been at his best the entire season. You know, he's been okay in some games, and then last night, not so good. But there are so many other more important reasons as to why the Giants' offense is not producing to the level that you want. And he is not even close to being at the top of that list. And I guess that's what I try to be defensive about, because I think it's unfair, and I just try to explain to people who don't understand, who think it's, you know, it's too easy to point at the quarterback. I'm just trying to explain to them why they shouldn't be doing that.
Well, there's different facets to an offense. It's not just one individual player. I know, I believe it was a caller earlier said the Giants offense is only going to go as far as Eli Manning. Well, I would argue the Giants offense is also going to go as far as the offensive line is concerned,
that's
too.
That's the real answer.
I mean, that's where you really should start.
Look, here's the one thing that I really would like to see people do. I'd like to see people watch the games, try to understand, and then try to make their own opinions based on what it is that they're able to decipher, as opposed to just reading a headline on a website or reading a headline in a newspaper and then automatically pointing to the quarterback. Because this game, okay, more than any other game, is a domino effect type of game. And when an offensive line goes bad, a ton of other things go bad right behind it. And that doesn't mean that it's the fifth domino's fault. No, the primary culprit is that first domino that spilled the rest of them.
To everything else. Yeah. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got a few more calls I want to get to before we wrap up. Will is in the Bronx. Will, what's happening?
Hey, Paul. How you doing, man?
Hi.
Doing well, Will. What do you got?
Okay. I think that what we're seeing right now is Coughlin's karma, because last year we didn't have any talent, and we lost games because of that, and Coughlin paid penalty for that. He shouldn't have left. The coaching, I think that the coaching right now is a little bit suspect, because we got all of this talent, and we're not getting any production out of it. So that you have to turn to the coaching. So with all of these little subtle coaching changes that we had this year, I think that what we're seeing is just the inexperience and the newness of all of these changes that took place early in the season. I think it'll get better later when the players start. I just think the players aren't really believing in the scheming right now, because, for all the talent we got, we should have much more production.
Oh, I think that's a valid point, and we brought that up earlier, as I mentioned. When you're the sixth overall offense in total yards, you would think you could put up at least 20-some-odd points a game. So clearly they're going to have to make adjustments. I don't know if I would go so far, Paul, to say that there's no confidence in the scheme. I don't think that that's necessarily apparent. Yeah. It's the lack of execution with respect to the scheme. That, to me, is a better way to describe what's going on, Will.
But there's no variety either. I mean, it's very vanilla. When we see two high safeties but still trying to pass the ball deep instead of taking advantage of the run situation. Plus, we got practically four guards in the center. We should be able to pound a rock a little better. So, I just think it's the coaching that we need to
– Well,
the last caller said, the scheming was just disastrous.
I'm going to ask you a very short and simple question.
Sure.
Even if you think the Giants should be running the ball better, who is the proven running back that's been in the lineup the last couple of weeks that has that resume that makes you feel so strongly about it?
I think that both the two guys that are starting right now, Darkwood and Rainey. They've shown enough on film that they could get the job done.
It's limited.
I just don't think they'd be
it is limited.
Right positions to take advantage of better run schemes.
To be fair, neither one of those guys have been 1,000-yard rushers in this league. I don't think their resume is so proven, is so in stone that you could say automatically, hey, the Giants should be able to run the ball a whole lot better with those running backs. I think those guys have shown that they're capable NFL players, and I think you'd like to believe that there's more production in their pockets that is going to come out as the team develops. But I can't sit here and tell you that your statement is 100% accurate because they don't have the resume that makes you feel that way.
Will Darkwood made his first career start this year, keep
enough,
in mind.
They don't even run the ball enough. If you look at the last three games,
yeah,
we've been really passing the ball quite more than running it.
It's not a great run-blocking offensive line, though. We know that, too. You know, to be fair. And that's the way this team is built, okay? They are a better pass-blocking offensive line, and so it's going to be more jaded towards the offensive scheme, towards the quarterback and the receivers. That's the way the team's been built.
And you also need to understand, Will, if you're looking at this Packers team coming in, I mean, just think about it. They're number one against the run, but they're 29th against the pass. So from a strategic standpoint, I agree with you. Balance is important. And I'm all for running the ball, even
so
if you're not having a lot of success. I'm all for that.
You
look at yesterday, 15 runs, 35 passes. That's not the type of balance you want to see. But with that being said, you have two corners that are out for Green Bay. You say to yourself, we like our matchup through the air much more than we do on the ground. It's hard to argue why you shouldn't then pass under those circumstances. Well, based on the personnel you're going up against.
I mean, here's the one thing I do want to tell you.
I heard somebody say earlier that when you have the scheme where you're having like a two safety high situation, Eli should know to audible to a run.
He does that a lot.
We don't do it enough, and we're getting killed because of it.
You know,
I think those two backs we got back there right now are good enough to at least help us out.
Just a number I want to give you, and again, stats don't tell you the whole story, but the Giants, 2.9 yards a carry, you know, 15 carries for 43 yards. Coming in, Packers were giving up 1.8 yards a
carry. Number one in the NFL.
Not just 40-something yards a game, but the average per carry was under 2 yards a carry. That's insane.
Yeah, it was through the roof, those numbers.
Really good.
And, Will, listen, appreciate the phone call. Thanks
so
much for
chiming
in. Yeah,
good call, though, and I appreciate your perspective.
And balance is important, and I just wanted to really add quickly before we get to the last phone call. You know, he was talking about how if the safeties are playing back, you want to run the ball so you bring them up. But I still think even with not having a great deal of success on the ground last night, you know, there were opened opportunities in the middle of the field, Paul, based on the Green Bay defense. And that goes back to having a tight end that can make those type of plays over the middle so you can continue to move the chains.
How'd that work out?
The execution wasn't there. That was the big problem.
Yeah.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Jeff in New Hampshire. Jeff, what's happening?
Not much. Just a handful of things from the game and early part of the season. Just trying to keep a little perspective like was being talked about early. We lost two games to two really good teams on the road, Green Bay and Minnesota. I think when the season started, most people expected us to lose those two games. So from that point of view, it's not the end of the world. These two losses just make that Washington loss hurt even more for me.
Yeah, that's the bad one. That's the really bad one.
The home game, the division game, and when you know you got two really tough road games coming up, you got to find a way to win that game.
Yep.
That one's stinging more 3 weeks later than it was when it happened.
Sure.
A few different issues. We were talking about Flowers. Somebody suggested moving him from the left side to the right side. I understand left tackle is considered like the premier offensive line position. You'd get their best pass rusher. I don't know how much that's true anymore. I don't think teams always have their best pass rusher the right side.
They mix and match. Yeah.
I was watching the Denver game yesterday afternoon, and Vic Beasley got four sacks. He killed him. He's coming from the right side. It was the right tackle that was getting beat all game long. So I don't necessarily believe moving Flowers to the right is a solution. I do believe something's got to get done with him. His penalties, they always come at a bad time. It's always in the middle of a drive that we're moving the ball. You know, our offense can't get into any rhythm. We're never on the field. You know, look how long Green Bay's first drive was yesterday. Look at the time of possession.
We can't get off the field on third down as a defense.
Yeah, they were four for four on that first drive.
It improved, though, Jeff, after the first drive, it did get better. Green Bay did not finish very strong on third down, but early in the game, you're right, that's a big reason why they put that 16-play, 75-yard drive. The Packers were 4 for 4 on third down, and they converted a 3rd and 10 in which Aaron Rodgers ran down the left sideline for 11 yards to ultimately set up the Jordy Nelson touchdown.
After that initial drive, they were 5 for 15.
Yeah, it improved. It did get better, the third down defense.
It just feels like that's one of the things I've been saying for like the last 4 years that's been frustrating, the third downs. Part of it's the pass rush. We don't have a pass rush. The thing that makes me nervous long-term about the pass rush, we've talked about JPP and Olivia Vernon, they're playing like, what, 98% of the snaps or something?
Yeah.
And they're still not getting a lot of pressure. They're going to be worn out by the 16th and 15th, 16th game. We're not getting anything from Odighizuwa, Kerry Wynn, any of our backup defensive ends. And even Hankins, he's great against the run, but his second year in the league, he got pressure up the middle, and that helped the ends. He's not getting pressure up the middle. He's gotten a little bigger. Maybe he's not. Doesn't have the speed. We know Harrison's not a guy that gets pressure. Those guys do their job against the run, but they're not helping out against the rush. That's a problem long term, because I agree with what you guys said earlier in the show. I thought our secondary played awesome last night.
Yeah, you know, the coverage was solid.
We have to cover. You can't ask NFL players to cover for 6-7 seconds.
No, you can't.
They kept showing the stat on the TV about how long Rodgers is holding the ball. I mean, the guys are covered.
Yeah, well, Rodgers was
extra time.
Jeff, he was running out of the pocket. And you were saying to yourself, oh, something's going to break down deep down the field. And even after that, he was throwing balls, and the Giants were getting their hands in the passing lanes under those circumstances.
My last point, because I know we're over, just real quick, and I don't really have an answer, just kind of an observation. You look at our first two games of the season, the games we won, the thing that gave me so much hope and why I thought this was a different team, all the things we were doing right in those games are the things we've been doing wrong in the last three games, and I don't know what changed. We were talking about missed tackles today. Look at the first two games.
Yep.
Our tackling was on point.
Yep.
We were making good, clean,
without
fundamental
question
tackles as soon as the other guy got the ball. And I don't know where that fell off from. I know, you know, Eli Apple was making a lot of great plays. He's been out. But I don't think he's just one player. But in general, we were not missing tackles. Through two games, we were one of the least penalized teams in the league. That's gone completely out of control. On all three phases, offense, defense, and special teams, we're shooting ourselves in the foot with penalties. And then the turnover thing. Jenkins has played amazing, an incredible pickup. He's just single-handedly keeping us in games with his coverage and with the interceptions. But the not getting turnovers, turning the ball over, the penalties and the tackle, I don't know how that changed from week two to week three to five.
Yeah. Look at the drop passes. Basically, like we said, making a play. They were making the plays in the first 2 weeks. They're not doing it now. Every category.
Oh, the red zone. The red zone.
Every
Dallas game. Every time we got the red zone, we got a touchdown.
They were 3 for 3.
Dallas in the red zone, we held them to a field goal.
Every category that helped the Giants go 2-0 has now been bad in the three-game losing streak. You're 100% right, and I'm glad because it shows you listen to us on this program. You're an educated fan, and that's a great call.
And, Jeff, with that being said, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. Certainly a lot of people weighing in over the course of the program. We appreciate all the phone calls. Didn't get to as many tweets as we'd like, but Paul and I will address a number of them
off
the air.
Yep.
And we'll be with you each and every weekday here on Big Blue Kickoff Live starting at noon Eastern. So the Giants fall to the Packers 23-16 on Sunday Night Football. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday right here on Giants.com.